Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're taking a deep dive into, well, the fundamental architecture of pretty much everything around us, and even inside us. We'll be exploring how these incredibly tiny particles dictate some really grand biological processes. And we're guided here by some truly profound insights from Dr. Hoffman's lectures.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. What Dr. Hoffman does so well is connect what seems like, basic high school chemistry to these deep biological implications. He really helps you see that even the smallest changes at the atomic level, like just shuffling electrons around, have these huge consequences. It shapes everything, really,
Yeah.
from the salt on your table to like the signals firing in your brain. It's foundational for understanding life.
Absolutely. So that's our mission for this deep dive, right? We want to distill those key insights from Dr. Hoffman. We'll look at chemical reactions, atomic structure, the different kinds of chemical bonds, and then see how all that builds up to how our cells actually communicate. And hopefully make these ideas, not just clear, but really kind of surprising and relatable for you listening. So maybe let's start where Dr. Hoffman does with what he calls the dance of matter, chemical reactions. He starts with this really compelling idea that at their core, chemical reactions are basically just a rearrangement of electrons. Simple as that, almost. You've got your reactants stuff you start with on one side of the equation, then this sort of energetic electron dance happens, and boom, they transform into completely new products on the other side. It's like a cosmic reshuffle, but with rules.
Right. And the example Dr. Hoffman uses is, well, it's incredibly striking. He talks about two really dangerous substances. You've got elemental sodium, that stuff that explodes if it even touches water, basically.
Yeah, definitely handle with care.
And then poisonous chlorine gas, deadly on its own.
Okay.
But then through this specific electron rearrangement he describes, these two incredibly hazardous things combine and they form sodium chloride, which is just table salt. Essential for life.
Wow.
The insight there is just huge, right? A tiny shift in subatomic particles completely changes the properties from lethal to absolutely vital. It's not just a change, it's like something totally new emerges.
It really makes you stop and think, doesn't it? That leap from deadly to life-sustaining. And that brings us right to Dr. Hoffman's idea of emergent properties, like
Yep.
water, right? H2O. It's liquid, it dissolves things.
Yeah.
But hydrogen and oxygen, the elements it's made from, they aren't watery at all. They're gases.
Exactly. Those distinct water properties, they emerge only when hydrogen and oxygen combine in that specific way.
And Dr. Hoffman even brings this down to our own bodies, like with sweat. You sweat, the water evaporates because it's volatile. But the salt, which isn't volatile, gets left behind on your skin.
Right. It's not like each water molecule is super salty. It's the difference in properties between water and salt emerging from their chemical nature that leads to that separation. A basic process our bodies count on. And building on that, Dr. Hoffman clarifies the difference between elements and compounds. It sounds basic, but it's key. An element is just one kind of atom. You look at the periodic table, there are, what, just over 100 natural ones?
Right, not that many, relatively speaking.
Exactly. But here's the mind-blowing part he illustrates. From those 100-odd basic building blocks, nature constructs millions of different compounds, maybe functionally limitless. Each with its own unique properties. It just shows the power of combining things.
It really does. And it makes you ask, well, what are we made of primarily? Dr. Hoffman gives this great breakdown. He points out that oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen, just those four, make up something like 96% of the human body.
Wow, 96%.
Yeah, and pretty much all living organisms, which makes total sense because they're the backbone of all the big biological molecules, fats, proteins, DNA.
Yeah, macromolecules, yeah.
Exactly. And he also makes this interesting point that heavier elements, the ones further down the periodic table, tend to be detrimental, toxic, often.
So there's a kind of sweet spot in terms of element size for life.
Seems like it underscores that delicate chemical balance. Okay, so let's zoom in now, past the elements, right into the atom itself. Dr. Hoffman really emphasizes how inconceivably tiny atoms are, like trillions of them needed just to make something visible to the eye, millions in just one cell you can't even see.
Quadrillions in our bodies.
Quadrillions, they're the basic units of matter, he says, but, and this is important, they aren't the most fundamental particles.
Precisely. We all learn about protons, neutrons, electrons. But Dr. Hoffman makes it super clear how their specific arrangement and, crucially, their charges dictate everything else. So, protons, positive charge, plus one, packed into the dense nucleus at the center. Neutrons, no charge. Similar size to protons, also in the nucleus. And then electrons. tiny, tiny compared to protons and neutrons, carrying an equal but opposite negative charge, NACE1. And they're buzzing around outside the nucleus. He does mention the classic planetary model electrons orbiting like planets.
Yeah, the one you see in textbooks.
Right. He says it's a useful visual, maybe, but ultimately false. It's more like a probabilistic cloud where they might be.
Mm-hmm.
Quantum mechanics territory.
And here's where it gets really critical, right? The charge balance. Dr. Hoffman explains a neutral atom has the exact same number of positive protons and negative electrons. Charges cancel out. Perfect balance.
Mm-hmm.
But if that balance gets thrown off, you get an ion. And he stresses, in normal chemistry, the number of protons, the identity of the element stays fixed. It's the electrons that get rearranged.
That's the key variable.
Exactly. Gain electrons, you become negatively charged an anion. Lose electrons, you become positively charged a cation.
And that electron movement is chemistry, essentially, which leads to this absolutely fundamental question Dr. Hoffman nails down. What really defines an element? What makes gold gold and not lead?
Mm-hmm.
And his answer is crystal clear. It is only the number of protons in the nucleus, period.
Just the protons.
Just the protons. Not the electrons. Their number can change to form ions. Not the neutrons. Their number can vary, creating isotopes. It's the proton, count the atomic number, that defines the element and gives it its place on the periodic table.
So if you could somehow change the proton number,
you'd literally transmute it into a different element. That's how fundamental it is.
Okay, so we have these particles. Now, how are those electrons arranged? It's not just random, right? Dr. Hoffman describes this elegant architecture. Electrons occupy specific energy levels, or shells. He uses this great analogy, like a ball bouncing downstairs.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
It can land on step one or step two or step three, but never hover between the steps.
Right, discrete levels.
Electrons are like that. They exist only in specific energy states, these shells, never in the gaps between them.
And he details the capacity of those first few shells, those energy levels. Shell one, the one closest in, the lowest energy level, can hold a maximum of just two electrons. It only has one orbital, called the S orbital.
Okay, two in the first shell.
And shell two, the next step up, it's bigger. It can hold up to eight electrons. These are spread across one's orbital and three P orbitals. Two of the S6 and the P's adds up to eight.
The magic number eight, the octet rule, starts showing up.
Exactly. That number eight signifies a particularly stable, happy state for an atom's electron configuration. And as Dr. Hoffman explains, achieving that stability is a huge driver for chemical reactions.
So what does that mean for most elements then? If eight is stable, Dr. Hoffman basically says chemistry happens because most elements are not inherently stable like those noble gases on the far right of the periodic table.
Yeah, the inert gases.
Yeah.
Helium, neon, argon.
Right. Their outermost shells are already full. They've achieved that stability, so they don't really react. They're, you know, noble and aloof.
Oh, yeah.
But most other elements, their outermost shells are incomplete. They're constantly looking to gain, lose, or share electrons to get to that stable, filled shell state, just like the noble gases.
It's this inherent instability, this drive to complete the outer shell, that makes them interact and form bonds. And this brings us to some important terms Dr. Hoffman defines. The valence shell. That's simply the outermost shell that contains electrons. And the valence electrons are the electrons in that outermost shell. That are the ones involved in bonding.
Okay, the outer players.
Exactly. And then he gives this slightly nuanced definition of valence itself. It's not just the number of electrons in the shell, but rather the number of electrons the atom needs to gain or lose or share to achieve a full outer shell.
Ah, so it's about the deficit or excess relative to stability.
Precisely. He uses fluorine as an example. It has seven valence electrons. So its valence is one. It just needs to gain one more electron to get to eight.
Right.
Versus sodium, which has only one valence electron. It could theoretically gain seven, but it's way, way easier energetically to just lose that one electron. So its effective valence relates to losing one.
Got it.
And this illustrates that key trend. Metals, like sodium on the left side of the table, tend to lose electrons easily, becoming positive cations. Nonmetals, like fluorine on the right, tend to gain electrons, becoming negative anions. All driven by that quest for a stable electron configuration.
Right. And this quest for stability, getting those electrons sorted out, leads directly into the chemical bonds Dr. Hoffman discusses. The two main types. First up, Ionic bonds.
Mm-hmm.
These typically form between a metal, which wants to lose electrons, and a non-metal, which wants to gain them. And it's not sharing, it's an outright transfer.
Yeah, giveaway.
Exactly. Back to salt, sodium literally gives its one valence electron to chlorine, which needed just one. So sodium becomes Na plus ite, a positive ion. Chlorine becomes Cl, a negative ion.
Opposites attract.
Strongly. That electrostatic attraction holds them together. But Dr. Hoffman makes this really important point. Ionic compounds like salt don't form distinct individual molecules.
Right, not like water molecules.
No. They form these vast, continuous crystal lattice structures. Think of a salt crystal.
Billions and billions of ions all stuck together in a repeating pattern.
Exactly. So the term formula unit, NaCl, just represents the simplest ratio within that huge structure. It's not one discrete NaCl unit floating around on its own, usually.
Okay, so that's ionic. Then the other major type Dr. Hoffman covers is covalent bonds. And here, the name helps. Covalence. It means sharing valence electrons.
Ah, cooperation.
Pretty much. Mm. This typically happens between two nonmetals. And importantly, Dr. Hoffman clarifies that hydrogen, even though it's over on the left of the periodic table, acts like a nonmetal in bonding.
Good clarification.
And unlike ionic bonds held by just attraction, covalent bonds are generally much stronger because the atoms are literally linked by sharing pairs of electrons.
Yeah.
This is what forms true discrete molecules,
yeah,
self-contained units like H2O or CO2.
And Dr. Hoffman describes different types of covalent bonds too, right? Single, double, triple.
Yep. Single bond is one shared pair of electrons. Double bond, two shared pairs. Triple bond, three shared pairs.
And they get stronger as you add more pairs.
Generally, yes. A triple bond is much stronger and shorter than a single bond between the same two types of atoms.
Okay. And then he drops this bombshell about carbon.
Oh, yes. Carbon.
It's tetravalence, meaning it can form four covalent bonds at the same time.
Four connections.
And combine that with the fact that it's the smallest, simplest atom that can do this. Dr. Hoffman basically says that's why we're carbon-based life.
It's the foundation.
That ability to form four stable bonds allows for incredibly complex chains, branches, rings. It's the basis for the insane diversity of organic chemistry and, well, life itself.
But Dr. Hoffman digs even deeper into covalent bonds. There's another crucial distinction he makes.
Mm.
Polar versus nonpolar.
Okay, what's the difference there?
It all comes down to something called electronegativity, which Dr. Hoffman describes really well as an atom's greediness for electrons in a bond.
Greediness, I like that.
Yeah. So in a nonpolar covalent bond, the two atoms have very similar or identical electronegativity. Think two oxygen atoms in O2, or carbon and hydrogen in methane, CH4. They share the electrons pretty much equally. No one's hogging them.
Fair sharing.
Fair sharing. But in a polar covalent bond, one atom is significantly more electronegative greedier than the other. The classic example is water, H2O.
Mm-hmm.
Oxygen is way more electronegative than hydrogen.
Okay.
So the shared electrons spend much more time buzzing around the oxygen atom than the hydrogen atoms. This doesn't create full ions, but it creates slight partial charges,
oh,
a little bit negative delta minus on the oxygen, and a little bit positive delta plus on the hydrogens.
Ah, so the molecule has charged ends like a tiny magnet.
Exactly. It's a polar molecule. And Dr. Hoffman is emphatic. He says none of us would exist without water's polarity. It's responsible for almost all of water's unique, life-giving properties, dissolving things, surface tension, all of it.
Wow. It's amazing how critical that little imbalance, that polarity is,
yeah,
just from electron greediness. And based on that polarity, he then introduces hydrogen bonds.
Right. Now, these are different. Dr. Hoffman is clear. They are not true chemical bonds like ionic or covalent.
Okay, so what are they?
They're much weaker temporary attractions between different polar molecules. Think of the slightly positive hydrogen end of one water molecule being attracted to the slightly negative oxygen end of a neighboring water molecule.
Like tiny magnets sticking together temporarily.
Exactly, like tiny magnets. They're constantly forming and breaking, especially in liquid water.
But still important.
Oh, incredibly important. They're responsible for many of water's properties, like its high boiling point. And Dr. Hoffman mentions they're critical for things like water's ability to dissolve salt, pulling the ions apart. He kind of teased that up for a future discussion on solvation.
Okay, so we've gone from atoms to bonds, polarity. Now let's shift gears a bit, following Dr. Hoffman. How does all this basic chemistry enable communication within biology? How do cells talk to each other? He explains that chemical signals, molecules, sometimes even just ions, cause specific actions in our bodies. And they operate almost entirely based on one key feature, their shape.
Yes, this is such a core principle Dr. Hoffman lays out. A signal molecule only works, only triggers a response, if it can physically bind to a specific receptor molecule. And that binding depends entirely on the receptor having the perfect complementary shape to fit the signal molecule. He uses the analogy of a glove only accepting the correctly shaped hand.
A lock and key mechanism, almost.
Very much like that. And he points out that these receptors, the gloves, are almost always proteins.
Why proteins?
Because proteins can fold into an essentially limitless variety of complex 3D shapes. That huge potential for shape diversity allows for the incredible specificity needed for all the different signals in our bodies.
And the example Dr. Hoffman gives here is just brilliant, comparing endorphins and morphine.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Endorphins are what our own bodies make endogenous for pain relief, pleasure.
Natural painkillers.
Exactly. Morphine is a drug, comes from outside exogenous. Chemically, it's a different molecule overall.
Yeah.
But as Dr. Hoffman explains, a specific part of the morphine molecule, he calls it the business end, happens to have the exact same shape as the part of the endorphin molecule that binds to the receptor.
So the receptor can't tell the difference at that binding site.
Precisely. It fits the glove. The receptor just sees the shape it's looking for, binds the morphine, and triggers the same pain relief effect as endorphin. It perfectly illustrates how critical shape is, independent of the molecule's total identity.
And what happens when that signal molecule, that hand, fits into the receptor glove? What's the immediate result? Dr. Hoffman highlights that the binding causes a conformational change in the receptor protein.
Meaning the receptor changes its shape slightly.
Exactly. A subtle but absolutely critical shift in its 3D structure. And this shape change, he points out, is how the signal gets relayed inside the cell, even if the signal molecule itself never enters. The receptor changing shape on the outside triggers other events on the inside. It lets the cell know something has happened out here, leading to a specific cellular response.
So that shape change is the transmission of information. And Dr. Hoffman broadens this idea with the term ligands, which is basically anything, any molecule or ion that binds specifically to a protein.
Right. So signal molecules binding to receptors are ligands, but so are substrates binding to enzymes or oxygen binding to hemoglobin in your blood.
Okay. It's a general term for the binding partner.
Exactly. And the universal consequence, Dr. Hoffman states, is that ligand binding always causes a conformational change in the protein it binds to. That shape shift is what enables the protein to do its job, whether that job is catalyzing a reaction, transporting something, or sending a signal.
Mm-hmm.
It's fundamental to protein function.
Wow. What an incredible journey through Dr. Hoffman's insights. We went from, you know, the explosive meeting of sodium and chlorine rearranging electrons to make salt, down into the unbelievably tiny yet precisely structured world of atoms and their shells.
The dance of electrons?
Exactly. All the way up to how the specific 3D shape of molecules acts like a language, dictating communication between our cells and driving basically every biological function.
It really does underscore this amazing theme from Dr. Hoffman's lectures, doesn't it? That the most complex things we see in biology, even life itself, are ultimately built on these remarkably elegant, consistent chemical rules.
Yeah.
And it's all governed by the properties and the precise interactions of these tiny, tiny particles and their shapes. It's profound, really.
Mm. It absolutely is. And it leaves you thinking, right, considering how the mere shape of a molecule can trigger such massive effects in our bodies, and how just rearranging invisible particles can completely change something from deadly to essential, what other seemingly small, maybe insignificant physical detail shapes, charges, arrangements might be dictating huge processes out there, or even inside us, that we're only just starting to grasp? Definitely something to chew on until our next deep dive.